Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward became two of America's most celebrated reporters after they broke the Watergate story for the Washington Post. Their Watergate book, All the President's Men, was adapted into a film which starred Robert Redford as Bob Woodward and Dustin Hoffman as Carl Bernstein, who is my guest today. Woodward and Bernstein went on to collaborate on a book about Richard Nixon called The Final Days. Then they went their separate ways. Bernstein moved to New York and from 1980 to 84 worked at ABC TV News. Bernstein's personal life ended up in the news when Nora Ephron wrote a novel called Heartburn based on their marriage. She portrayed the husband as a philanderer who left his wife when she was pregnant. Carl Bernstein has just completed a memoir that examines the McCarthy period through the story of his parents' persecution and his own memories as a red diaper baby. Bernstein's parents were briefly members of the Communist Party. His father was a lawyer who worked as the director of negotiations for the United Public Workers of America. He defended over 500 union members who were investigated after President Truman's 1947 executive order, which created loyalty boards to evaluate federal workers' loyalty to their government. Bernstein's mother participated in civil rights and civil liberties demonstrations and was called to testify before the House Un-American Activities Committee when Carl was 10. Carl Bernstein's new memoir is called Loyalties. He started this book back in 1978. I asked him if there was something in his life at that time that led him to begin looking into his parents' lives.
I think my whole life I had been both confused, repelled, and fascinated by what had happened to my parents and what had happened in my childhood and to the people that I knew as a kid. The first day I went to work at the Washington Post, I looked up my parents in the file, and there was my mother listed under Bernstein, Sylvia, local commie. So I wanted to find out what had really happened in the country and in my house.
But you kept stopping.
Well, I did all the research, and I wrote what is now the first 50 pages of the book. And I gave it up after a year and a half. I was blocked, or so I thought. It's clear to me now that I was too young to do the book. But more than that, I wasn't a father yet. And this is very much a book about fathers and sons. And then I went back to the book in the end of 1984, and I finished it last year.
How did becoming a father change your approach to the book?
I think it changed my own feelings and desire to get to know my own father better and to know what really had happened to him. Here was this wonderful, you know, the brightest man I think I've ever known in my life, who came to Washington to be a participant in the events of his day as a political participant. And by the age of 40, he was excluded. He was essentially purged from the community of Washington that has to do with government.
Now, your parents had never told you if they were actually members or not of the Communist Party. You knew that they were leftists. You knew that your father had defended about 500 people in the loyalty board hearings. But it was very important for you to find out, well, were they members of the party or not? Why was it so important for you to find out, and why were they so reluctant to actually address that question?
I actually never had any real doubts that they were members of the party. My father, I think, had as much as told me so many years before. But I wanted to know what it meant. I had no idea what it meant to be a member of the party. And they were so reluctant, as my father says here, because he thinks it'll demean all the powerful and wonderful things that he did in his life on behalf of civil rights, on behalf of union organizing, on behalf of fighting fascism. And I understand my father's fear. My father thinks this country has not changed enough to handle this kind of information. I think he's wrong. I think that one of the reasons that the country has never been able to handle this kind of information is that people who were on the left really have never gotten up and said, yes, we were members of the Communist Party, and explained what that meant.
Your parents throughout the book keep elaborating on reasons why they do not want you to proceed with the writing of this book. And bear with me while I just read a few of the reasons
Sure.
that they tell you. That they're afraid that you'll be naming names of people in the party who don't necessarily want to be public about it.
I don't do that.
Okay. They were afraid that your work would prove McCarthy correct, that there really were a lot of communists in the country. And like McCarthy, by writing this book, you'd be dragging them out of the closet.
Why don't we take them one at a time?
Sure. Okay.
My father says a really fascinating thing in the book. He says, you're going to prove McCarthy right, because all McCarthy was saying, my father says, is that a lot of us were communists and that the system was loaded with communists, and he was absolutely right, my father says. What my father does not say, of course, is that McCarthy had no idea who was a communist and who wasn't. But the important thing to do is that, I see this book as my father's last great act. That through the story of my childhood and my father's experience, that maybe finally we can have some understanding in this country about what happened in this terrible time, but through this intensely personal story.
Let me get to a couple of personal things your mother and father said. Your mother said, if you focus on our relationship to the Communist Party, it will shatter my life again. Your father said, there's no reason why we should have to spend our declining years justifying what we did, getting involved with controversy. And then your father says, your father had been a good friend of Jessica Mitford's. And he said that when she was writing her book about being on the left, that she only mentioned names of people who gave permission. And your father said, this was a courtesy you did not extend to your mother and I.
Well, let me give you a couple answers. The latter point is that I'm a journalist and I'm known for both the accuracy and the completeness of my reporting, and there was no way that I could write this book without addressing the question of whether or not my parents were members of the party.
Let me ask you what I think the bigger question is. Your parents didn't want this book written about them, and you persisted in writing it, and I guess I can't help but wonder why you would make your parents' life public when they were clearly begging you not to.
Well, I think that what you have to look at is what their reluctance had to do with was this question of membership in the party. And quite rightly, they said, look, the membership in the party was really incidental to our lives. We went to a few meetings, maybe a dozen meetings. We were members of the party between 1942 and 1947. There were reasons for being a member of the party in those days. And their concern was that there would be no context to that information. They had gone through a terrible witch hunt at the prime of their lives. And they don't want to go through it again. And I understand that.
I guess I was especially surprised at your persistence in writing about your parents in spite of their reluctance, knowing how reluctant you were to have the movie of Heartburn made. And when you and Nora Ephron were divorced, there was an attachment to the divorce settlement in which, at your request, she wrote that you could read and comment on the screenplay for the movie, that the father in the movie, who was roughly based on you, would be depicted as caring toward his... be depicted as a caring father, that your children's privacy would be protected throughout the screening and the publicity that followed. And it just seemed to me that you were someone who really wanted to have control over how you were represented.
No, I'm somebody who believes that a piece of work ought to be about the truth. And that was a piece of fiction.
But it's fiction, yeah.
It bears very little resemblance to the truth of my life or that of what actually happened in the marriage. So I wanted to make sure that in no way was I or my children going to be harmed by a depiction that wasn't true. So that I insisted that if that movie was going to be made, that anything having to do with any events that resembled my own life or those of my children, that it hew to the truth. And this book is about the truth, and you're talking about apples and oranges.
You think so?
Absolutely, because, again, you're talking about a work of fiction, and you're talking about... Also, I think you've got the tone quite wrong about my parents' reaction. I think my parents have some political reasons, particularly, about the pain that they went through, and they're not convinced of the usefulness of this undertaking. I think now that they've read it, they understand it a lot better. And happily, their friends and contemporaries who went through this experience with them also. They've been very supportive of my parents, and at the same time, they see why this has to be done.
My guest is Carl Bernstein, and we're discussing his new memoir, Loyalties. Let's talk about some of the research that you did for the book. One of the things you did was get the Freedom of Information Act folders.
Yes, the FBI amassed about 2,500 pages of files on my parents over
It's an impressive volume. Were you surprised how busy they were tracking your parents?
Yes. It's impressive in size. It's certainly not very impressive in terms of the actual work that the FBI did, because it's all to one end, and that is to say that my parents knew people in the Communist Party, and that they themselves may or may not have been members of the Communist Party. Actually, they were never able to find out if my father was a member of the Communist Party. But the information starts to make sense when I combine it with other information that I undertook, and particularly when you see that it turns out that J. Edgar Hoover, in fact, wanted to round up and put in detention camps all members of the Communist Party and their sympathizers in the event of a national emergency. And during the Cuban Missile Crisis, I tell the story of how my sisters and I kept getting phone calls at home trying to fix our parents' whereabouts. And the reason for that was that this piece of legislation introduced by Hubert Humphrey, of all people, the great liberal senator from Minnesota, provided that there be detention camps established in the time of a national emergency. And at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, indeed, the FBI was trying to fix the whereabouts of leftists and liberals in this country, getting ready to send people off.
What were those calls like?
They were chilling. I didn't understand. I thought it was innocuous at first when I got it. And then later that night, other friends of the family came over to watch television and televised accounts of Kennedy and Khrushchev and what was happening with the missiles in Cuba. And it turned out that they had all gotten identical calls during the day. And the reaction of people in the room was, as you can understand, outraged. And my reaction, for the first time, I started to understand what it was my parents and their friends had said to me since I was a small child about things the government of this country might be engaged in terms of terrible acts that we associate with totalitarian governments.
You found out through the Freedom of Information Act files that the FBI had actually been conducting surveillance at your bar mitzvah.
Yes.
Were there any clues at the time?
No, none of them came and kissed the Torah as far as I know. But they then proceeded to follow around my aged Uncle Itzel, age 75, in his old Dodge as he went around collecting subscription money to the Jewish Daily Forward. They thought this was some kind of plot or something. No, the ineptitude of the FBI would be funny if it weren't so insidious, because you have to remember that these files became the basis on which people's lives were ruined. These files became the basis for the information on which my father was hauled before the Senate Internal Security Committee. And Eastland got up and said to my father, "You don't have a right to counsel because this is an investigation of treason and a bunch of traitors." This, in fact, was an investigation of a labor union that did great things in the city of Washington, that integrated the city, that as my father says at one point in the book, we were the conscience of the city. These were the files that became the basis of the witch hunts, that became the basis of the Un-American Activity Committee calling people before them who had no alternative but to take the Fifth Amendment, because to say that you had actually been a member of the Communist Party was to face a fate even worse than taking the Fifth Amendment.
Right. Now, you say that the loyalty oaths and the loyalty hearings were the basis of the of HUAC and of the McCarthy period. Your father defended around 500 people in his union, the United Public Workers of America, in their appearances before the loyalty boards. This, I imagine, did not get him into
favor. And in fact, the FBI files say Bernstein has had unusual success at winning judgments favorable to people charged under the Truman Loyalty Order. Let's back up a second and explain what this loyalty order was, which really is the hidden piece of the history of the Cold War, that really is the first act of McCarthyism in America after World War II. And it came in 1947 when Harry Truman, the sainted president that we revere and honor today, initiated a loyalty order in which 10,000 people were driven from their jobs in government on the basis of vague allegations that they were somehow disloyal to the United States because of their politics, which tended to be to the left. They were hauled before star chamber proceedings with no right to confront their accusers, no right to see the information on which the allegation of disloyalty was made. And this really is the hidden history of our times. It, to my father, he kept 200 of the transcripts of these proceedings that he defended people in under the steps in our house, presumably so the FBI would never come and find them. And those proceedings are still classified. So, and to read them in this book, I follow one trial, as it were, all the way through, is to think this couldn't have happened in this country. This must have happened in the Soviet Union. This is a purge. This is a purge like we associate with Stalin, not with Truman.
Well, your father lost his job, and then his union was expelled from the CIO. He ran a laundry for a few years in order to keep the family financially solvent. And then he got another job after
right.
7 years at the laundry. Does he think, and do you think, of his life as having been ruined by the purges?
No. The remarkable thing about my parents is that they rebuilt their lives with dignity. My father still went on to be chairman of the Progressive Party's Anti-Discrimination Committee in Washington, which really desegregated the town, which led, there's a chapter describing how as a little kid, I and my mother would go downtown with black people and sit in at, this was in 1953, mind you, at lunch counters, which were all segregated in the city. We desegregated the swimming pools of the city. But the real thing is, and then my father went on to be the chief fundraiser for the National Conference of Christians and Jews and to work in the wonderful program that that organization does around this country. No, anything but a wasted life.
You know, one of the things that surprised me about your new memoir, Loyalties, was how difficult it seemed to be for you to understand why your parents became leftists. And especially when you were younger, I mean, it meant that you were also separated from your friends because you were condemned by your friends because your parents were mentioned in the newspaper for being leftists. But as you got older, it was still really difficult for you to comprehend why they were leftists.
Oh, I don't have any difficulty comprehending why they were leftists, and they were leftists for all the right reasons. And I share the values that I got from my parents. I had difficulty comprehending why they had joined the Communist Party. And that was, but that's a far different question about being on the left. It seems to me that if you believed in certain principles, there was no place but the left to be, and I'm proud that they were there.
No, I mean, you even described when you were young how you sometimes really resented your parents' activism and you would take your father's Woody Guthrie records and break them.
I think I resented less their activism, that as a small child, I knew that whatever my parents' activism was about, that it had caused horrible things to happen to my parents, that my parents had become ostracized, that I myself as a child had gone to the playground the day after my mother testified before the Un-American Committee and some kid said to me, your mother's a communist, and that was about the biggest fight I ever had. I knew that the Rosenbergs had been executed and that they, too, were progressive people, as my parents described themselves. And if the Rosenbergs could die, particularly Ethel Rosenberg, what was to prevent my mother from frying? I think I had a child's reaction. As I got older, I certainly had no difficulty understanding why they were on the left. But I did want to find out why they had been attracted to the Communist Party. And the reason, as my father explains, was quite simple. He was a labor leader on the West Coast when he joined. He had moved from Washington to the West Coast. The leadership of the labor movement on the West Coast in San Francisco were members of the party, and it was a logical place to take your political beliefs at the time when the Russians were our allies. And if you believed in three fundamental principles, organizing workers, the rights of black people, and fighting fascism.
Have you spoken to other red diaper babies and compared experiences?
Yeah, I went to a camp for a week 2 years ago to a red diaper baby conference, and it was both a wonderful experience, and it also reminded me of a lot of things that I find difficult about the left. One of the things I do find difficult about the left is sometimes the failure of particularly the communist left and its legatees. Of listening to the views of people with whom they disagree, and some of the rhetoric and some of the language, which seems to me is alienated people from the very decent causes that they have espoused. And I saw an awful lot of that at this Red Diaper Baby conference.
I've read you say that one of the reasons why you got into journalism is because there's no true believers there.
I think that's true. And in this book itself, I am not a true believer, though I'm very empathic and sympathetic to my parents' values, and as I say, I share them. I think I was attracted to journalism because it involves really looking at things and seeing where the facts take you. It's anti-ideological.
You broke with Bob Woodward the Watergate story. Nixon was a staunch anti-communist. Was your parents' background ever investigated or used against you when you were investigating Watergate?
It's a fascinating story, and we never told it in All the President's Men. After I had been on the story about 2 weeks, I went to Bob and I said, you know, there's something you should know, and there's something Bradley, the editor of the Post, should know, that I come from left-wing parents, that both my parents were accused of being communists and called before congressional committees and took the Fifth Amendment. And I went in and told Bradley, and he said, fine, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And to our amazement, we never heard anything about it until it was too late. And that was on the eve of the Senate Watergate hearings. A member of the staff of Senator Weicker, a source on Weicker's staff for both Bob and myself, called Bob to say that a high official of the Justice Department had come down to see them that day and convinced him that the reason for the Washington Post vendetta, that was the word he used, against Richard Nixon was the fact that Richard Nixon had been a member of the Un-American Committee when my mother had been accused of being a communist and brought before the committee. As usual, the Nixon White House and the Justice Department had been inept. They hadn't gotten their facts straight. My mother was called before the Un-American Committee in 54. By that time, Nixon had been a senator and was a vice president of the United States. He had nothing to do with those events. That was all we heard about it. But we sort of expected we'd hear something, but we never quite expected them to screw it up as badly as they did. It was like everything else that the White House did in Watergate.
If it wasn't screwed up, how do you think it might have been used?
I think that it would have been very difficult information for the Washington Post to handle if early in the game, when the Nixon White House was trying to make the conduct of the press, of Bob Woodward and myself, particularly the issue in Watergate, instead of the president and his men. Had they come out then and said, you know, the whole reason for this is that Bernstein's mother had this background, and here it is, and they laid it out, I think it would have caused some problems. It also would have caused the Washington Post some problems, and they would have had to make some difficult decisions.
You were reporting on television for a while as a bureau chief and then as reporter for ABC Television. How did you react to working on television after being a print reporter?
I think television is a great reporting medium, and I loved being on the air. I didn't like being a bureau chief because I'm a terrible administrator. But the next book I do is I'm starting on it now, is about the American press. And one of the real difficulties, it seems to me, about the press in this country is that reporting, real reporting, which is to say the best obtainable version of the truth, going out and really knocking on doors. Real reporting is the last priority of the three television network news divisions. It really is still print that does the reporting in this country. I was on a forum at Harvard University the other night, and I asked, and there were a lot of television people on this panel, and I said, you know, you guys spend more money, I suspect, at the three networks covering the news than all the newspapers in this country combined. Can you name me three stories and significant stories in the last 10 years broken by television, and nobody could come up with them?
Let me ask you about something that you say in Loyalties. You ask this question, how can you be honest and not hurt people? And you're asking this in terms of wanting to tell the truth about your parents, but not wanting,
right,
not wanting to hurt them. Is your answer to that any different than it's been over the years? And is your answer to that any different when it's a story about your family that you're telling, or when it's a story involving the fate of the nation, like with Watergate?
Well, I think, first of all, that one of the things I feel really proudest about my journalism since the time I'm 16 years old, is that it's not a mean-spirited body of work. I don't think you'll find any mean-spirited stories I've ever done. And one of the things that really, and I want to look at in this new book, is sort of the growth of mean-spirited journalism.
In your new book, you mean you
want
to make this?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That now is a staple of kind of the nasty, malevolent piece that we see in many of our style sections and in many of the gossip columns. What's that all about? Where does it come from? So one of the things that whenever I've done pieces before this book that I knew were going to be difficult for those I was writing about, that I wanted to go out of my way to make sure people weren't unnecessarily hurt, and at the same time to be truthful and fair and accurate. And of course, it's especially true in terms of my own family and people I've known all my life. It was a very difficult line to hew in this book, but I think I did it.
Do you think of yourself as having been the subject of the type of malevolent journalism you were referring to?
Yeah, I think there's a certain measure of it, sure. It goes with the territory. I'm not surprised at it. You know, I think also you kind of Woodward as well has gotten it. You know, I think it tends to be concentrated on people who are well known. It comes partly from a ridiculously short-sighted approach to human events, which is to look at things in terms of black and white and people as kind of shooting stars whose trajectory you follow, that they're either up one moment or down, down the next. That life is really about mostly in the gray area. And you got to measure it over the long haul. And it's thoughtless for the most part. But I think it's a huge problem for journalists in this country, and particularly for responsible editors.
Can you tell when a piece like that is coming? In other words, when you're talking
almost,
to a journalist.
Almost always, but sometimes you're surprised. Sometimes a journalist you'll talk to will appear both interested in facts and then you end up being totally surprised by the piece. Life goes on from that stuff.
Right. Well, I thank you very much for talking with us about your new book and a little bit about your life. Thank you for your time.
Okay.